This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello, welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I am Chinedu Ofor, and here's what's coming up.
I was really drowned in fear of death, fear that I would die, fear to leave my family, fear to leave my kids. I was in a state of shock. Cancer drugs are really expensive. It's not easy to access them.
That was Rumbizai Kanu-Kanwe, a Zimbabwean who was diagnosed with breast cancer after three false alarms on her reaction. All this and more coming up on Africa News Tonight. Somalia has welcomed the International Court of Justice decision, giving it a right to control much of the 100,000 square kilometers of the Indian Ocean following a dispute with its neighbor Kenya. Somalia called on Kenya to respect the court verdict. Kenya says it will not abide by the court's decision. Mohamed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
On Tuesday evening, Somali President Mohamed Abdullahi Farmaajo said his country accepts the International Court of Justice verdict. The Somali leader said that in respecting international laws, the Somali federal government accepts the court ruling in line with international laws and norms. He said Somalis hope Kenya's government will respect the supremacy of international law and forgo what he described as it is misguided and unlawful pursuits. He said Somalia hopes Kenya will take the verdict as an opportunity to strengthen the relationship between the two countries and cooperation between their people. Kenya and Somalia have been involved in a court battle since 2014 over where each country's border in the Indian Ocean starts and ends. After a seven-year process, the ICJ President Joanne Donoghue delivered the much-awaited ruling over the border dispute.
Unanimously decides that the starting point of the single maritime boundary delimiting the respective maritime areas between the Federal Republic of Somalia and the Republic of Kenya is the intersection of the straight line extending from the final permanent boundary beacon, PB-29, at right angles to the general direction of the coast with the low water line.
In a statement issued Tuesday, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta has criticized the court decision and alleged the court has no jurisdiction over the matter. He said the decision will damage its relations with Somalia. Kenya argued in court there was an agreed boundary between the two countries, but the court said Kenya's claim was not consistent because it signed a memorandum of understanding acknowledging the matter was in dispute. The judges unanimously decided there was no agreed borderline between the two countries. The court awarded Somalia the bulk of the territory while adjusting the border slightly northward. Nabil Orina, an international law expert, said the adjustment was meant to address Kenya's security and economic interests.
The court agreed that there was need to slightly adjust the equidistant line northwards in order to accommodate Kenya, which would be significantly cut off if the line remained like that. So that is why the line, again, was redrawn. So in this case, then Kenya gained a bit of maritime territory, but a bigger chunk of that went to Somalia.
The Hague-based court also rejected Somalia's demand for compensation for Kenya's past economic activity in the area. It remains to be seen how the two East African nations manage the border situation as the region faces pressing issues, including terrorism. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
In the Democratic Republic of Congo, there is a controversy over the appointment of the head of a new organization to help surrendered militia fighters return to a peaceful life. Tammy Tambwe this week took up his position as the head of the Demobilization, Disarmament, Community Reintegration and Stabilization Program in the Eastern DRC. But many residents there say Tambwe is the wrong person to lead the organization because he spent decades as the leader of the Rwandan-backed rebel groups in the region. Human Rights Watch and other groups have said he is the wrong person for the post, and Congolese Nobel Peace Prize laureate Dr. Denis Mukwege says the appointment is, quote, rewarding criminals, unquote. In Goma, in the Eastern DRC, journalist Jafar Al-Katanti has been covering this story. He spoke with my colleague Kate Pound-Dawson earlier today.
It's a program made by the president to take care of the surrenders from militia army groups, you know, all of them were saying we are ready to put back our weapons, but we need a support from the government. How we will live after leaving the bush? And the government, since 3 months ago, created this program, DDRC, to take care of surrenders after their surrendering. And on Monday, Mr. Tony Tambwe came from Kinshasa to launch the activities of this program.
What is the controversy about Tommy Tambwe?
Tommy Tambwe himself is a former rebel. He was in RCD in the... So he was an actor of the 96 war. And then he joined the M23 rebellion in 2012. So many people, the opposition and civil society, say that to have someone as Tommy Tambwe on the head of this program is something like to give a prize to a militia, to give a prize to someone who kill people. And last week, the Nobel Prize, Dr. Mukwege, said that the nomination of Mr. Tambwe is as to give a promotion to a criminal.
Now, how does the government defend the appointment of Tommy Tambwe? What does the government say?
The spokesperson of government said all Congo came from one of rebellion. We have some minister farmer militia, so now we can't not say that Tambwe is the only one man who coming from a militia. But the difference is Tambwe was an actor in many criminal acts in Eastern DRC, and he's sent here in Eastern to manage, to lead other militia. So somebody here, the local society, think that Tambwe will not succeed because he will work in what he did before.
How has the demobilization program been going?
Before he came, there was some problems with the former militia surrendered. For example, those who were in the transit camp, many of them left the camp because they said the treatment was not good. They didn't have enough food to eat. Sometimes they made 3 days without eating, and some of them left the camp. For example, the General Machano left the camp, fled with several militia, and returned back in Ufamando, which is a mining area in Walikale, and he controls again Ufamando. One of them have been arrested in a armed robbery case of lot of money, around $200,000.
That was journalist Jafar Al-Katante in Goma speaking with VOA's Kate Pound-Dawson. In Italy, Julian Lucange of the Democratic Republic of Congo was recently proclaimed the winner of the 2021 Aurora Humanitarian Prize for her work with wartime victims of sexual violence. She was one of the 5 humanitarian finalists who were up for the award, often referred to as the Nobel Prize for Humanitarian Work. Sabina Castelfranco reports from Venice.
The 6th Aurora Prize for Awakening Humanity was announced Saturday, October 9th, at a ceremony on the Venetian island of San Lazzaro degli Armeni. Congolese human rights activist Julien Lucange was awarded the $1 million prize for her fearless, tireless work with women and girls abused during wartime and for her efforts in helping bring the perpetrators of rape and sexual violence to justice. Lucange is the co-founder and director of the Congolese Women's Fund. She and 4 other humanitarians were nominated in April as finalists for the prize. The other nominees included Grégoire Ahong Bonon, who helps people in West Africa with mental illness, Ruby Alba Castaño, a Colombian activist who protects the rights of peasants, Ashwaq Moharam, a Yemeni physician who provides life-saving support to victims of starvation, and Paul Farmer, an American medical anthropologist and physician. The ceremony began with music and a special prayer in the monastery of the island of San Lazaro by a sect of Armenian monks who have lived on the island since the early 18th century. After speeches and a performance by Italian tenor Andrea Bocelli, the finalists were called on an outdoor stage with a view of the Venetian lagoon. The name of the winner was announced in what turned out to be a very emotional moment, not only for Lucenge, but for many of those in attendance, which included two women winners of the Nobel Peace Prize, Iran's Shirin Ebadi and Liberia's Layman Gbowe. Lucenge was in disbelief and in tears when she heard she had been chosen.
This prize is important for all Congolese people, Congolese women and Congolese girls, because now we'll have enough money to support them.
For many years, Lucenge said she struggled to find funds to help these women. She said she is happy now that she knows she will have the financial strength to do so much more. The Aurora Prize for Awakening Humanity was established by three philanthropists of Armenian origin, Vartan Gregorian, Nubar Afeyan, and Ruben Vardanyan, in 2015, on the centennial of that country's genocide. They decided that for 8 years, the length of time the atrocities lasted, in which 1.5 million Armenians perished, the prize would be awarded to extraordinary humanitarians for their work and impact. Nubar Afeyan, one of the three co-founders of the prize, described it as a gift from the Armenian community to the world. Their aim, he added, was to help people who are making a difference in the world in the same way as those who helped Armenians survive.
We're trying to find people today that are saving the lives of others, just like people saved the lives of our ancestors.
In addition to creating the annual award for those who have faced personal risk to enable others to survive, Afeyan is also the founder and CEO of Flagship Pioneering, a venture capital company focused on biotechnology. The company has fostered the development of more than 100 scientific ventures, including Moderna, on which he serves as chairman. Afeyan last year was recognized as one of four U.S. immigrants leading the efforts to find a vaccine for COVID-19. Sabina Castelfranco for VOA News, Venice, Italy.
South African police have charged a senior member of the ruling African National Congress with murder. This is the latest development in a tense, violence-wracked build-up to the country's local government elections scheduled for November 1st. ANC officials have been battling one another for positions on candidate lists that could result in high-paying government jobs. Darren Taylor has more.
The police allege that Mandla Msibi, who up until yesterday was an ANC agriculture minister in Mpumalanga province, shot dead two fellow party members and wounded another after a branch meeting in the city of Mbombela in late August. Investigators have described the slain men as people who didn't agree with Msibi's way of doing things. The ANC had tasked Msibi with winning millions of votes for party candidates.
As the ANC in Mpumalanga, this came as a shock, because Comrade Mandla was one of our committed comrades who was coordinating the elections.
ANC Provincial Secretary Lindiwe Nchalinchali says her party suspended Msibi pending the outcome of his trial.
Every member of this community or as a citizen has a right to a fair trial, and a person is presumed innocent until proven guilty before the court of law. It is painful. It is disturbing, but the law must take its course and the truth shall be unveiled at the relevant time.
Part of that truth, according to police, is that the slain men, ANC members Dingaan Ngwenya and Sindele Lubisi, confronted Msibi outside a restaurant after the political gathering. They apparently wanted to voice their displeasure about ANC election candidate lists over which Msibi had control. Nchalin Chali says she can't comment about this.
It's not a good allegation. That is why we don't want to prejudge him. There are authorities which are tasked to investigate, make sure that they present credible evidence before the courts. These are members of the ANC and would want to know really what happened, because it happened outside the ANC meeting.
The fact is, two ANC officials are dead and a senior colleague has been arrested. It's another blow to the party's credibility at a time when multiple members are facing corruption charges, services are collapsing in ANC-controlled municipalities, and pollsters are predicting huge losses for the ANC in the upcoming elections. Nchalin Chali confirms that quite a few party members remain deeply unhappy about being excluded from candidate lists and therefore left with no chance of winning top posts in city and town councils after the elections.
All issues, whether we're disputing, whether we're satisfied or not satisfied about the process of candidate selection and registration, it shall be dealt with immediately after elections. There is no amount that can make a member to kill one another or to go and attack other members while they're in meetings.
But as South Africa moves towards the polls, that's exactly what's happening within the ANC. The police have confirmed to VOA that Msibi also faces another 10 criminal charges, including some of serious assault, some of which date back at least 3 years. Opposition parties are asking why the ANC didn't expel him years ago, instead of allowing him to continue representing it in Mpumalanga, even promoting him as head of elections in the region. For some analysts, the Msibi incident is further evidence that the ANC is no longer the party of Nelson Mandela, but something very, very different, something much darker and much more dangerous. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In Zimbabwe, the government is being urged to create a cancer tax to ease the burden for breast cancer treatments. Healthcare specialists note that cancer diagnosis and treatments are very expensive. Rutendo Mawere reports from Harare.
48-year-old Fungai Munyeza says that when she was informed that she had cancer, she thought it was the end of her life.
When I discovered my right breast nipple sucked in one morning, I panicked right away and consulted my GP. After going through an initial biopsy, I was told that cancerous cells had been found. And a few days later, I received the shocking news of my life that changed me, that I had stage 2B. Breast cancer. I was devastated.
Munyeza was also distressed because she knew how expensive cancer treatment is in the country and also what she had been charged to get a biopsy. Munyeza says patients need financial support.
The government should also subsidize on cancer treatment. A lot of people are not affording cancer drugs, they are way, way too expensive.
For Rumbidza Ikanukamwe, it was a lump in the breast and a series of misdiagnoses until the fourth diagnosis when the cancer was discovered, already at stage 3. Like Munyeza, Kanukamwe says she lacked information about the disease, but she knew that cancer treatment is expensive in Zimbabwe. Kanukamwe, who says she was charged between $2,000 to $3,000 for chemotherapy, says,
I couldn't believe it. I thought it was also a misdiagnosis in the beginning. I was really drowned in fear of death, fear that I would die, fear to leave my family, fear to leave my kids. I was in a state of shock. Cancer drugs are really expensive. It's not easy to access them. You can find them anywhere and everywhere, but financially, it's too exorbitant.
Kanukamwe says a government subsidy on cancer treatment and testing will help.
I personally, as a cancer survivor, would advocate for a cancer levy, just like we have the AIDS levy. And breast cancer in particular is not just a women's disease. It also affects men. So both men and women, let's check our boobs.
Junior Mavu is the general manager of the Cancer Association of Zimbabwe. She says,
cancer is generally an expensive disease in terms of diagnosis, in terms of treatment, because most of the drugs now for chemotherapy are bought in foreign currency. So it becomes very difficult and very expensive for somebody from, you know, way down Gairezi there to raise enough US dollars to buy the treatment. So yes, I'll confirm that cancer treatment is not cheap.
Mavu concurs with breast cancer survivors that a cancer fund is the solution.
When HIV started and where we are now, we've moved miles and miles where people are getting free drugs, free ARVs, free tests. And I would also want that to happen to cancer patients, where they can just walk into Karere Nyatwa, where they are treated, get a prescription, go to the pharmacy, get their drugs for free, and then be treated. So I think we also need to pull up resources so that we then move the same way that we did with HIV and AIDS.
Mavu says while the cause of breast cancer is unknown, there are risk factors that contribute, including those above the age of 40 years, those with a family history of breast cancer. Zimbabwe's Deputy Minister of Health, John Mangwiro, admits cancer diagnosis and treatment is very expensive and says while government's aim is to manufacture cancer drugs in the country to cut down on the cost, raising awareness of the disease is also very crucial.
Cancers, generally, if they are caught while they are just beginning, the cancer can most probably be cured, including surgery, chemotherapy, and all that. So what we want is to have awareness campaigns from different groups so that we can bring awareness.
While VOA was unable to get the Zimbabwe Cancer Registry registrar, Mr. Eric Chokunonga, for broadcast, documents he sent to this reporter shows that breast cancer is the third most common in Zimbabwe at 8%, after cervix cancer at 20%, and prostate cancer at 10%. The Zimbabwe Cancer Registry says annual trends show that breast cancer is on the increase, with an average of 600 new cases recorded annually. According to the registry, breast cancer is more prevalent among those aged between 40 to 45 years of age. For VOA, this is Rutendo Mawere in Harare.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I am Chinedu in Washington. For all latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. And thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African Beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC.